Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
I'm Sumi Somaskander from the Global Story podcast, where we're asking how the US election could impact the war in Ukraine. With Kamala Harris and Donald Trump neck and neck in the polls, President Zelensky's campaign to ensure crucial funds don't run out is increasingly uncertain. So will the result in November change his nation's fate? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to NewsHour live from the BBC World Service in London. I'm Rebecca Kesby. There is really only one story for the programme today, and that is the killing of the leader of Hamas in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar. His death is being described as a seismic blow to Hamas, the group considered by many Western states as well as Israel as a terror organisation responsible for the murderous attacks on Israeli citizens on October the 7th last year that sparked the conflict in Gaza. Sinwar himself is widely accepted as the mastermind of that plan. Well, since that moment last year, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has promised to eradicate Hamas. So has Hamas now been decapitated beyond effectiveness? Is this a new opportunity to end the war? Or do the events of today herald a new, potentially dangerous phase in this conflict? As news of his killing broke, demonstrators in Tel Aviv in Israel took to the streets. They were calling for the release of the remaining Israeli hostages. One banner read, "Sinwar is dead, end the war." The news that Yahya Sinwar might have been killed began to emerge earlier in the day. DNA testing was carried out to confirm his identity. Then, within the past couple of hours or so, his death was announced by the Israeli government. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed the nation.
I stand before you today to announce that Yahya Sinwar has been eliminated. He who carried out the worst massacre in our people's history since the Holocaust, the arch-terrorist who murdered thousands of Israelis and kidnapped hundreds of our citizens, was killed today by our heroic soldiers. And today, as we promised to do, we settled the score with him. Today, evil has suffered a severe blow, but the task before us is still not complete. To the dear families of the hostages, I say, this is an important moment in the war. We will continue with all our might until we bring every one of your loved ones home, as they are our loved ones too.
Benjamin Netanyahu speaking about an hour or so ago. Well, following that, the US Vice President and US presidential candidate Kamala Harris spoke to the press. She said it was key that the threat Hamas posed to Israel should be eliminated.
Today, there is clear progress toward that goal. Hamas is decimated and its leadership is eliminated. This moment gives us an opportunity to finally end the war in Gaza. And it must end such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination. And it is time for the day after to begin without Hamas in power.
Kamala Harris there. And since she spoke, President Joe Biden has spoken to Prime Minister Netanyahu, and reports are saying that the two men agreed to work for the release of the hostages following the death of Yahya Sinwar. So how did the Israelis manage to kill the man they've been after for a year? On the line from Tel Aviv, I spoke to Major Doran Spielman. He's the international spokesperson for the IDF, the Israeli military. So how did this operation unfold?
Thank you for having me, Rebecca, on what is a day that for Israel will be remembered, I think, forever. This is similar to the way that the United States remembers Osama bin Laden's capture and elimination And for Israel, the elimination of Yahya Sinwar is like eliminating Hitler. This is a man who planned and orchestrated an attack that literally touched every single family in Israel personally. These are not just names on a screen. These are people we really know. On that background, we have been operating, the Israel Defense Forces have been operating in southern Gaza, an area called Rafah, over the last number of weeks, in order to try to capture what we believe to be were the most senior Hamas terrorists operating in that area, including Yahya Sinwar. The problem is that these senior terrorists are often surrounded by hostages. They are often operating in tunnels deep underneath the ground. And the way that we felt was best to go about this was to force them, especially Sinwar, into behaving like a fugitive. And so we began to slowly close the areas, streets, blow up tunnels, and eliminate their areas of movement to a smaller and smaller area so that Sinwar would be forced to move like a fugitive and make a mistake. And in fact, just yesterday he did so. He left the tunnel. He went into an apartment building, and they opened fire on Israeli troops. Okay. A tank returned fire, and he was killed in that attack.
I mean, just to get clarity, though, it was rather lucky that you found him because he wasn't being targeted. You didn't actually know he was there when your soldiers saw him, did you?
This is absolutely good luck. We are all for having positive luck as opposed to negative luck. You know, we were operating in the area to try to force him to be a fugitive. And as when we eliminate terrorists, we go and identify the terrorists. Of course, every IDF soldier and every parent is holding their breath to see if a terrorist that's been eliminated is Sinwar. And the strategy worked, ultimately speaking, by forcing him, amongst with other terrorists, to get on the move. They made a grave mistake by opening fire against Israelis. And therefore, it really does show that the campaign is succeeding in terms of targeting those very senior terrorists.
Okay, you're saying the campaign is succeeding. We've just heard from Kamala Harris there, who could become the next US president, saying this is an opportunity now to end the war in Gaza. Is it likely, are your military forces likely to scale down their operation now in Gaza?
Look, I think that what Vice President Harris is saying, what President Biden is saying, they both realize that this has to be an era without Hamas. And those are comments also that they made. You know, and as long as Hamas is operating in the area, are holding our hostages deep underneath the ground in terror tunnels, are still able to launch rockets, albeit with limited capacity against Israel, all of those people who directly participated in the October 7th attack have got to be brought to justice.
From a
if
military...
we want a new page to be able to be opened in the Middle East and in Gaza, the old guard of terror has got to be taken care of.
Okay, so it's clearly a victory for the Israeli military today. How far is Hamas as a fighting force diminished now, would you assess?
I think that they're considerably diminished. We've eliminated at least half of all of their fighting force. We now have eliminated Yahya Sinwar, along with the number two, Mohammed Diyef, along with Ismail Haniyeh, who is in Lebanon, not to mention, of course, Hassan Nasrallah. And, you know, with the elimination of these forces, this is causing a shakedown in Hamas. And that can be an opportunity. As President Biden said, there is a chance now.
Okay.
That there's an opportunity to move forward.
I mean,
Yahya Sinwar was opposed to any deal, and hopefully somebody will come to the fore that will be more positive and more open.
And briefly, I mean, many people listening will point to the fact that there are now 42,000 dead Gazans that have been killed over the course of this war, and that your forces have been operating with military-grade weapons in highly densely populated areas. Again, today we had a school that was targeted in Jabalia. We're told 22 people were dead, according to the hospital nearby. Children were among the dead. Can you tell us what happened in that operation and why it was targeted when you knew civilians were there?
Well, what I can tell you, Rebecca, and I'm glad that you brought this up, is the tragedy of the death of the Gazan civilians, just like the tragedy of the 1,200 Israelis and the hostages, boils down to the Hamas ideology, the leadership of which is Yahya Sinwar. He had written a script over a year ago, hoping that Israel would follow him into Gaza where he could hide behind civilians. He was safely underground, hiding in buildings while the people of Gaza have to be moved from location to location. Israel's going to more extent than any other civilized army in the world has ever done to move civilians out of the way. But in all of these locations, as you know, Rebecca, because you read the news and I read the news and I've been in Gaza.
Well, you've been moving them to places where they've then come under fire again. So the UN has said that.
The areas that they're coming under fire, Rebecca, we know that as we move them to safe zones, Hamas is in the most cynical way possible. Okay. Have been operating from within those safe zones, hoping that Israel will return fire.
So the word safe zone isn't really accepted.
The world will be a safer place today, Rebecca, because people like Yahya Sinwar and Hamas terrorists are no longer here to threaten us.
And that was Israeli military spokesperson Major Doran Spielman speaking to us about an hour ago. Well, our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette, has been following events in the Gaza Strip all day. And I asked her how much of a blow this is for Hamas.
It is a huge blow to Hamas and a huge tactical victory for Israel. And as you just heard from the IDF, just sheer luck. It wasn't in one of those intelligence operations that they have been conducting for the past year. They'd talked about them and using also American intelligence to try to find him somewhere deep in an underground bunker surrounded by hostages. And then it was just some young soldiers, some of them serving for the first time, who came upon three or four people they identified as terrorists. And some of the Israeli media, one of the television channels, Channel 12, who interviewed one of the soldiers, said that they were joking with each other, saying, wouldn't it be funny if it was our operation, which took out Yahya Sinwar? And in fact, it was.
Goodness.
I mean, a huge blow for Hamas because of the centrality of Yahya Sinwar. He was a leading military figure, but with the assassination at the end of July of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, it was given to him almost as a crown that he became the political leader as well, because it was almost that he had to get it because he had put the Palestinian issue on the agenda in a way no one had done before.
So the Israelis have said they want to kill Sinwar right from the start. But, I mean, is the timing possibly even problematic for Mr. Netanyahu himself? Because he's now going to come under pressure to end the war, call this a victory and get out of Gaza, isn't he?
What Prime Minister Netanyahu has shown month after month is that he is a leader who relishes saying no. He boasts about it, that his good friends like Joe Biden keep calling him up and saying, you should end the war, the ceasefire is in sight, you have a plan, we have a plan. And he keeps announcing in his speeches, I said no, I will not agree to a ceasefire until we destroy Hamas militarily. He is now in his speech tonight, he is taking it as vindication that many had told him, don't go into Rafah. And Rafah is where they did get Yahya Sinwar. They told him to end the war. There were all these discussions, Rebecca, of a deal where Yahya Sinwar and those around him would be given exile, free passage out in exchange for giving up the hostages. And in the end, they got their man.
And that was our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette. And let me draw your attention to the BBC Live page on the BBC News website. Lots more details there and also reaction, especially around the region. And our reporters there saying that many people are out on the streets in parts of Israel celebrating the news today. And we'll have a lot more on this story across the next hour. Still to come on the programme, what is next for Hamas now after the killing of their leader in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar? We'll be hearing from a journalist who's spoken to many of the leading members of that organisation.
Hamas is over. The Hamas we know, and I think, you know, Hamas will change, of course, because until you have occupation, until you have, you know, what you have in Gaza and the West Bank, you will have a reaction from Palestinians. You know, it will change the name. You will have a different leader. You will have a different organization. Still, you will have resistance.
One other headline from the newsroom. UN experts say never before have as many people faced starvation as in Sudan today, with 97% of the remaining population experiencing severe levels of hunger. This is Rebecca Kesby with NewsHour live from the BBC. Now, it's thought Yahya Sinwar had spent much of the past year underground in the network of tunnels Hamas has built under Gaza. So not much has been heard from him over the past year. But here is a particularly chilling clip from him speaking in 2022. That's a year before the massacres of October the 7th, when around 1,200 Israelis were killed and many others taken hostage when Hamas fighters and others stormed into Israeli civilian areas. Let's just hear a bit of the clip. As I say, rather chilling, he says, "We will come to you, God willing, in a roaring flood. We will come to you with an endless number of rockets, in a flood of soldiers without limit. We will come to you with millions of our nation, tide after tide." That was Sinwar speaking in 2022. Well, I've been speaking to Dr. Michal Mishtein, who's an Israeli academic who's also worked in Israeli military intelligence. So what was his initial reaction to the news of Mr. Sinwar's death?
You know, the first time I heard about 5 or 6 hours ago about this report, I was quite skeptic, because a week ago we heard the same report. And, you know, after 2 or 3 hours, we realized that it is nothing. And only after I saw the photos of Sinwar, then actually not only me, many Israelis started to understand that, yeah, after a year, one of the greatest goals of the war was achieved. But, you know, I had a lot of interviews, Rebecca, this evening. And in every interview, I warned from euphoria. And, you know, it's okay for many Israelis to be happy this evening. This is the greatest achievement since October 7th. But at the same time, we must understand and we must remember that the war is not over. And that, you know, although our prime minister announced this evening that this is the beginning of the end, I'm not so sure that this is the beginning of the end. It's the beginning of a change.
Okay.
It's a dramatic event.
We'll come on to that in just a moment. What can you tell us about the man himself? Because, I mean, he had a fearsome reputation of being absolutely ruthless, particularly with
people he
thought were colluding with the Israelis.
Yeah, and you know, today when you speak with Palestinians, of course with Israelis about Sinwar, his basic image is a really cruel leader. You know, he was one of the founders of the military wing of Hamas, and he was known mainly as a member who is very good in identifying collaborators with Israel and killing them and executing them in a very rough and cruel manner. And you know, actually, this leader, this person, Sinwar, he represents October 7th. This was the mission of his life. He took the whole movement, actually the whole Gaza Strip, with him to an ideological adventure.
Okay.
And the results of this adventure, of course, they are horrible for the Palestinians.
Will he be replaced? And if so, by who?
Great question, because, you know, no doubt, Rebecca, that he leaves a vacuum behind him, a big one. And I think that actually there is no one who can get exactly to into his shoes. His authority must be split between two persons. First of all, his brother Muhammad, who I assess that he will replace him in the military level. He's not a political or strategic leader, and he will continue the activity of the military wing. On the other hand, and this is an opportunity for Israel, it seems that into the political vacuum will get the leaders of the outside leadership. I mean, Khaled Mashal and Musa Abu Marzouk and other persons who are more flexible regarding the negotiations over the deal. And this can be an opportunity to promote the deal and the release of the hostages.
Michael Milstein there, Israeli academic who's also worked in the nation's military intelligence. Well, we've heard from the Israeli military earlier. What about the political leadership, though? Benjamin Netanyahu has welcomed the killing of Yahya Sinwar. I've been speaking to Boaz Bismuth. He's a member of Mr. Netanyahu's Likud party. So is Sinwar dead? Is that now the end of the war in Gaza?
I don't think the hostages are back. I don't think that Hamas is not in Gaza anymore. I mean, controlling parts of Gaza, and I don't think that quietness and peace has we have it back in our southern border. And this is why I think the war is all not over yet. I think that the elimination of Yahya Sinwar is a huge step towards victory, because as I told you before, when I had the occasion to be interviewed by you, I told you this war will not be over until Israel will win it.
Are you not in a position now to declare victory, given that Hamas is effectively decapitated?
As long as I don't have my hostages back, how can I declare victory? I heard the families of the hostages today. They are very worried, on the contrary, because of the fact that Yahya Sinwar is eliminated, which is a huge thing. It's an amazing announcement. It's an amazing news, not only for Israelis, for the Middle East, for the people in Gaza, for the people in the world. I mean, all those who want peace and stability should be happy today, or will be happy today, or must be happy today. But the hostages are not back yet.
Well, quite. And I mean, doesn't negotiating for them, gaining their release, doesn't this death make that more difficult? I mean, do you know who's got them?
So first of all, I mean, we know that where they are. We know that they're in Gaza, the same thing that we knew that Yahya Sinwar was in Rafah. Let me remind you that a few weeks ago, a month, I don't even recall, I mean, events are happening so fast, international community, among them friends of ours, well, proposed or asked us not to go to Rafah. And you see, we told you Yahya Sinwar is there, and that was a good thing. I mean, it was a must going to Rafah. Hostages also, as much as we know, I mean, are spread all over the place, and we cannot declare victory until the hostages are back.
What's the plan then? Because when the leader is dead, who do you speak to? Who do you negotiate with to get those hostages back?
Well, unfortunately, in the Middle East, you don't have a vacuum. You know, when an evil guy disappears, an evil one comes back. Yet the war this time, and this is maybe the big difference of this war in 2024, is that you're changing. You're not only eliminating Yahya Sinwar or Nasrallah in Lebanon, you're this time really sincerely changing the Middle East. And I'll explain. For years, I mean, we thought of maybe, I mean, we shall speak to the wicked ones and maybe they shall succeed in transforming them to nice guys. Well, they never succeeded.
But as you just said, I mean, I think you said the words yourself, Yahya Sinwar will be replaced by another Hamas official. I mean, unless you keep going, which could take years to eradicate this movement, and then what do you do?
There is a big difference. First of all, concerning negotiation with the terrorists in order to bring back our hostages, I mean, ever since December, there were at least five or six propositions coming from our government, from our prime minister. Yet, I mean, it's not Israel, it's the American president, it's the American administration, who told us for weeks already, or even months, that the reason why we did not get or conclude a deal is Yahya Sinwar. Now, you must understand one thing. I mean, we're dealing with evil people.
You've claimed this scalp today. It's a major victory. Isn't it time to scale back your operation in Gaza?
Dear Rebecca, as I said before, this war can be over in exactly 30 seconds. My hostages back. Hamas is not controlling Gaza. And that's it. The war is over. No need. We only want, of course, to have peace in our south. But as long as our hostages are not back, how can I stop the war? But believe me, I mean, you're not only to a member of Knesset, you're talking to a father who has his daughter in Rafah. You think I don't want my daughter to be here beside me in Tel Aviv? What do you think?
And that was Boaz Bismuth there, member of Mr. Netanyahu's Likud party in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. He was speaking to me earlier. We're going to stick with this story. Lots more details emerging. And also we'll be looking at what the United States might have to say on the issue. It's all coming up after the news.
I'm Sumi Somaskandar from the Global Story Podcast, where we're asking how the U.S. election could impact the war in Ukraine. With Kamala Harris and Donald Trump neck and neck in the polls, President Zelensky's campaign to ensure crucial funds don't run out is increasingly uncertain. So will the result in November change his nation's fate? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to NewsHour. The rate at which Palestinian homes are being demolished in occupied East Jerusalem has almost doubled since the start of the conflict in Gaza, according to human rights groups and monitoring organisations. The demolitions are ordered by the Israeli-run municipal authority, who say many of the buildings are illegally built. But they've been accused of using demolitions as a form of legalised collective punishment. The BBC's Wira Davis reports.
Walking through the remains of what used to be his home, 29-year-old Ahmad built the modest single-storey building for his family of six and his parents 7 years ago. But he always feared the city authorities would come after him because he never had a permit to build, even though the land is his and the family has lived here for generations.
I decided to demolish my house after I was hit by penalties for demolition by the police and the Israeli court. I couldn't pay the fines and risk losing things like health insurance and my child insurance. So I was forced to demolish my house. Of course, we appealed to the court, but they refused.
Almost all attempts by Palestinian families here in East Jerusalem to apply for planning permissions are rejected by the Israeli authorities. That means many growing families feel they have no choice but to build illegally and face the potential consequences, huge fines and demolition orders. Control of Jerusalem is one of the most contentious issues of the decades-old conflict. Palestinians officially claim East Jerusalem as their capital, while Israel considers the whole of the city as its capital. Who is allowed to build where in the city is a big part of that battle. According to human rights monitors, since the start of the Gaza war, the policy of demolishing Palestinian homes has reached unparalleled levels, almost doubling. Some say the law is being deliberately used to repress Palestinian growth and ambitions.
It's all under the same framework of expelling Palestinians and expanding the Jewish settlements.
Shay Parnas is a spokesperson for the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem.
The law is different for different communities who, as you say, live side by side in the same city. These Palestinian communities ask for permission, and between 95% to 99% of the requests are denied.
In some areas annexed by Israel, the physical growth of Jewish settlements has continued apace, while it's alleged neighbouring Palestinian suburbs are denied the ability to expand at anything like the same rate. But Israel denies that demolitions are a deliberate policy of discrimination. In a statement, the Jerusalem municipality said the accusations were absolutely false and that it had local support for comprehensive building and construction plans across nearly all areas of East Jerusalem.
And that report from the BBC's Wira Davis there. You're listening to NewsHour live from the BBC. I'm Rebecca Kesby. Let's just recap on our top story for a moment. The killing in southern Gaza today of Yahya Sinwar, the leader of the group in Gaza of Hamas, the number one target for the Israelis for the past year. He was named by them as the mastermind of the Hamas attacks of October the 7th last year. Well, while we've been on air, the Israeli authorities have been giving more details of how he was found and killed. It all seems to have been something of a surprise. Spokesperson for the Israeli military, Daniel Hagari, has been giving more details.
He ran away and hid in a little cave there. And you can see this in the film. He was wounded in his hand and you could see that he was masked. We identified him as a terrorist and we fought and we shot at him and we found him with a revolver and 40,000 Israeli shekels. He was running away and we killed him.
And that was IDF spokesperson Daniel Hagari speaking through a translator there. Well, the US vice president and presidential candidate Kamala Harris has described the killing of Sinwar as being an opportunity to end the conflict in Gaza. So what should the US do now, and what will it have to say to the Israelis? I've been speaking to Mara Rudman, who's a former Middle East envoy in the Obama administration. She joined us earlier from Washington, D.C., and I asked her what her reading of the situation was and what the USA should do next.
Good to be talking to you at what I hope is a moment of opportunity. So I agree with the State Department spokesperson framing it that way. I also think it's interesting that Prime Minister Netanyahu used the word opportunity when he spoke following the announcement of the confirmation that Sinwar had been killed. So I think that there are some routes forward, perhaps open now, that weren't open before, though it's obvious that it continues to be a fraught time in the region and very important both to get the hostages out of Gaza and get them out safely, those who have survived, and to get much more humanitarian aid and assistance into the people of Gaza and to pave a way forward for the future.
But, I mean, while the hostages remain in Gaza, that is almost impossible, isn't it? I mean, some analysts are comparing this killing to that of Osama bin Laden of al-Qaeda in 2011 by American Special Forces. Is that a fair comparison, or is actually this more important?
I would not try to compare or prioritize the killing of terrorists who have committed truly atrocious acts and are responsible for them. I think in both cases, it is a step forward for the world that those individuals are no longer with us. President Biden himself, I believed, if I read correctly the statement the White House put out, did make a comparison in the sense of this was a similar moment in terms of creating opportunities. And I do think, actually, that yes, the hostages need to come out. Humanitarian aid needs to go in. One does not need wait for the other on that. But the opportunities are there to start to construct a different future for Israelis and for Palestinians living in Gaza and the West Bank.
Former Middle East envoy in the Obama administration, Mara Rudman, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. earlier. So what about the relatives, of course, of those killed and kidnapped on October the 7th last year? How are they receiving this news today? I've been speaking to Stephen Brisley, who's from Wales here in the UK. He told me he'd lost family in those Hamas attacks and his brother-in-law is still being held by Hamas in Gaza.
My sister and my 13 and 16-year-old nieces were murdered in their home on Kibbutz Be'eri, and my sister's husband, Eli Sharabi, was taken hostage to Gaza. And we obviously hope that he remains alive in captivity, but we've not had any news about him to know one way or the other. So obviously every passing day just continues the nightmare for us.
Well, it must have been a dreadful year. Every day must have been very stressful for you and your family, and I'm so sorry for your loss. What would you like Mr. Netanyahu's government to do now?
Well, I think this is a window of opportunity that has presented itself, whether by luck or judgment. It's very clear now that it's time to bring the hostages home. It's time to bring my brother-in-law, Eli, and all the other hostages back. We need all stakeholders, all governments to make a clear statement to Hamas that they must immediately and unconditionally release the hostages. It's over for them. We need to take this opportunity to end the war on both sides, to make sure that there is no more loss of life. But what Israel needs to do is to use this as an opportunity to bring the hostages home.
And Stephen, I mean, some people are saying, including Mr. Netanyahu, that they've got to keep pressing until all of Hamas is eradicated. I mean, how do you feel? Would you be prepared to know that there was still some sort of fighting force like Hamas or even Hamas, but to get the hostages home regardless?
Well, there's been talk of total victory all the way along, but what is total victory? It's a nebulous concept. Was it the death of Hania? Is it now the death of Sinwar? There is always somebody prepared to step into their shoes. But what is very clear is that Hamas's capabilities have been massively reduced. But what is also clear is that my brother-in-law, an innocent civilian, is being held captive. He's a hostage, not a prisoner of war. Hostage taking is a war crime. He's an innocent civilian. And the Israeli government must do everything they can to bring those hostages home alive now, because every passing day they are in mortal danger. We've seen hostages murdered in captivity, and I fear that Ellie will be next.
And briefly, are you concerned that with Sinwar gone, that there could be a vacuum of power in Hamas and actually things might be more chaotic and that could endanger the captives?
Absolutely, which is why the international community need to speak with one voice and make sure that that the hostages are brought out now and are released, because who knows what this vacuum of power will bring? Who knows what retribution might be visited upon the hostages, including my brother-in-law?
Stephen Brisley there, whose sister and nieces were killed on October the 7th. His brother-in-law, as he said there, is still being held. Well, Yahya Sinwar was born in the southern Gazan city of Khan Yunis in 1962. He spent more than a decade in an Israeli prison where he learned fluent Hebrew. He's said to have been a highly intelligent man and absolutely ruthless, particularly with anyone suspected of collaborating with the Israelis. Earlier, I spoke to Italian journalist Francesca Borri. She specialises in covering the region and actually interviewed Yahya Sinwar in 2018. So what was he like?
What was really remarkable, I think, he was unremarkable. I mean, his main feature was to have no main features. He was really an average man. I mean, with a shirt, usually with a grey or a blue shirt. You know, at the time, he was not very famous, at least, you know, in our Western media. I remember, first of all, he was always smiling. He was always smiling. It was very funny. It was his first interview ever, no? So I was thinking maybe he's shy, you know, with journalists. He was absolutely a skilled speaker and, you know, full of anecdotes and small stories. And he had very clear, you know, what life could be outside Gaza. And I remember, you know, when I was with him, there were these children on the beach, you know, at sunset, but really children, I mean, 7, 8 years old. And they were looking, you know, at the horizon and they were wondering, you know, who knows how the world looks like, you know, after the sea. And Sinwar said, you know, I don't want my children, you know, to dream of becoming doctors to treat the injured and the wounded. I don't want my children to dream to become lawyers to challenge, you know, the occupation. I want my children, the children of Gaza, to dream to become football players, whatever, like all the other children of Gaza. He really wanted, you know, to break the siege.
I mean, he's said to be quite a small man, but he had a fearsome reputation. Was it possible to tell when you met him whether the people around him were frightened of him?
No at all, because he was very friendly with everyone. But I will never forget that, you know, when I was basically writing down the interview, at some point I got you know, a newsletter from Amnesty International. And exactly in the same days, you know, when I was there with all the Hamas leaders, in a square, really 200 meters from the main office of Sinwar, six alleged traitors or spies, whatever, you know, six Palestinians were executed publicly in this square 200 meters away. Of course, you know, I didn't know anything. I was just with Sinwar, actually, in that moment. So, you know, the title of that interview was We Don't Want War Anymore. In the same, exactly in the same moment, you know, the two things went together.
Let me ask you this, Francesca. We've just had it confirmed in the past couple of hours or so that this was Sinwar that was killed today. All day there's been speculation. We've been waiting on DNA tests to get the confirmation. But early on, some pretty graphic images of the body of a person thought to be Yahya Sinwar have been sort of circulating on social media. I know you saw them and I think you recognised him straight away. Tell us how.
The watch immediately. It's a kind of watch which is not very common among Palestinians, but also a watch is not very common anymore, you know, because we all use the phone. the watch, because Sinwar always said, this is to remember, you know, that time matters and time flies, and I don't want to waste my time anymore. Life is now.
So what happens next for Hamas?
Oh, Hamas is over, the Hamas we know. And I think, you know, for Hamas, nothing changed yesterday when Sinwar was killed. All changed when Nasrallah was killed. The mainstay of October 7th of the plan was to force Arab countries and Muslim countries, you know, for sure Hezbollah, to step in, to basically to join, you know, the war. And this didn't happen. And when Hezbollah was killed, at that point was 101% sure that Palestinians were alone. Hamas will change, of course, because until you have occupation, until you have, you know, what you have in Gaza and the West Bank, you will have a reaction from Palestinians. You know, it will change the name. You will have a different leader. You will have a different organization. Still, you will have resistance.
And that was Italian journalist Francesca Borri speaking to me earlier. She did interview Yahya Sinwar back in 2018 there. And there's been all sorts of response from the international community coming in, lots of it on the BBC Live page. President Biden has been speaking. He described Yahya Sinwar's death as a good day for Israel, for the US and for the world. He said it was now an opportunity to end the war and bring the hostages home. That is a sentiment that's also been echoed by the French President Emmanuel Macron. He's calling for the immediate release of the hostages. Lots more reaction there on the BBC Live page if you can get access to it. You're listening to NewsHour live from the BBC. I'm Rebecca Kesby. So what's been the reaction to the news today inside Gaza itself? The BBC can't report from the Strip because Israel is not allowing international journalists, including the BBC, independent access to Gaza. But the BBC's Jane Hill managed to speak to Ghada Al-Kud, who's a journalist based in central Gaza at the moment. We've spoken to her several times across the course of this conflict. There were quite a few glitches on the line for obvious reasons, but she told us about the reactions she'd observed in Gaza today.
It was a shock news today when the people hear the news of Sinwar killing. They thought that he was under the ground in tunnels.
Do people feel that the direction of the war could change now that he is dead?
This is the problem. The problem that other leaders were killed, like Haniya, like Nasrallah. They thought like by killing Sinwar, the war will not end. Still, the airstrikes, the shellings, the north of Gaza is under bombardment. Still in south, also the same people, they say, what is the outcome of the war for more than 1 year? A whole destruction in Gaza. Many leaders, either from Hamas, from Islamic Jihad and other factions, they were killed. Gaza is a place, it's not for living. Everything is destroyed. No food, no water, no infrastructure, no source of life. So they consider this, what is the consequence of this war by destruction? And now all of Hamas, most of Hamas, either they were killed or assassinated.
And who do they blame for the way they're living now, everything you've just described?
It's a long conflict. They blame Israel first. It's they consider themselves under occupation. Most of the people who are killed, most of them, they are civilians. Also, they are blaming both sides, the Israelis and Hamas, for not achieving a ceasefire at the beginning of the war.
And does anyone think that the death of Yahya Sinwar could make a ceasefire more likely?
Well, this is need efforts from all the parties, from all the politicians, from all the Arab worlds, from the UN, from the EU, from the US, to find at least like a two-state solution for the Palestinian and the Israeli. This is the only way of live peacefully between the Israelis and Palestinian, not by killing the people. All of this can be done by a peace agreement.
And that was Ghada Al-Qud, their journalist based in Gaza, speaking to the BBC's Jane Hill. Well, another major story from the Gaza Strip today. Local officials say 22 people have been killed in an Israeli airstrike on a school in Jabalia, that's in northern Gaza. The Hamas-run health ministry says children are among the dead. The Abu Hussein primary school had become something of a shelter for displaced people, but the Israeli military says it was a precision strike targeting Hamas and Islamic Jihad fighters who'd been holding a meeting at the school. There are serious concerns now about the humanitarian situation, particularly in northern Gaza, where very little aid has been delivered in recent weeks. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says that Gaza could plunge into famine over the next few winter months and that it's becoming an unlivable wasteland. As I mentioned, journalists aren't allowed into Gaza, but our correspondent Fergal Keane in Jerusalem has put this piece together using material recorded by people there.
A hand sticks out from the rubble, dust covered, a streak of blood on the fingers and wrist. Men are digging. A girl stands in the background watching. She's motionless, in shock. A man tells of how his parents died.
I took my younger brother out at the last moment. He told me. I heard my mum and dad reciting the Shahada. I don't know how we can go back to our home in the north without my mother or father or brothers.
Inside a house that's still standing, a young man kneels in front of his dead sister. She looks to be in her 30s. In an ambulance, blood seeps from a dead child's forehead, a little girl. It looks as if the people here have been killed by the shockwave of the explosions. Outside in the street, ambulances are lined up, but they've become hearses. Bodies are piled inside. Ahmed Al-Khalut from the local civil defence is helping to carry the dead.
This is the Al-Sayed family house, and this is the citizen, Ashraf Al-Sayed, and his family. Bodies torn parts are now in the area of Al-Furqan Mosque. It is a horrible crime. In this area of Al-Fallujah, in Jabalia, a large number of martyrs are being pulled out of homes and from the streets.
The humanitarian crisis in the north is dire. America has accused Israel of refusing or impeding up to 90% of aid to northern Gaza in the last month and threatened to block arms shipments unless there's change. I spoke by phone with Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, the director of Kamal Adwan Hospital, inside besieged Jabalia.
We are talking about collective punishment for the health system in the Gaza Strip. Consequently, we urge the world to intervene and impose their humanity over the Israeli army to open humanitarian corridors that allow the entrance of medical tools, delegations, fuel and food so that we can provide humanitarian services for the children, newborn babies and patients who are in need.
The Israel Defense Forces began a renewed offensive here 12 days ago and ordered Jabalia's residents and hundreds of thousands of others in the north to evacuate south. But exhausted by repeated displacement, many thousands have stayed behind. The army says it only targets terror cells. The IDF released a video of what it said was Hamas firing from within a clinic. The army said they'd found weapons and booby traps in a medical facility.
Everything here is a cynical exploitation of the civilian population. Inside a clinic, inside a civilian compound. We will pursue these terrorists and find them in every corner.
In Jabalia, a heavily pregnant woman is helped onto a stretcher. Every day they plead for peace, for food and medicine, for schools to open. They plead, but no, their voices cannot make it stop.
The BBC's Fergal Keane with those stories coming from inside Gaza. That's it for this edition. Do stay tuned for the world news, which is up next.
Music.
The race to become the next president of the United States is on.
We can't drop the pace now.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Count on the BBC World Service to keep you informed on the latest breaking news, with insight and analysis you can trust.
Immigration, if you look at polls, a top concern for so many U.S. voters.
The issue of the economy reigns supreme for everybody.
For a global perspective on the U.S. election, search for The Global Story, the documentary, and The Global News Podcast, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.